Welcome, friends. Welcome to ArtCast. I'm your host, Ron Jacobs, with another great episode for you. On today's episode, we have Walt Richer. And Walt is one of the guys who helped me get started in this whole podcast thing. I think it was almost a year ago where we recorded an episode at VS Live Toronto. He and Richard Haleshaw, we all kind of sat around and chatted. Walt's another Northwestern guy from right here in Seattle who has to put up with this gray, gloomy skies that we have right now outside my window, and I can't wait for summer, but when it's really awesome to be here in the Northwest. But until then, you might want to stay away. So Walt's going to be talking to us about data binding and Windows Presentation Foundation, some really interesting stuff. I think you're going to learn something. So let's listen to Walt Richens. So Walt's a, where are you from?
I'm from Seattle, actually close to Redmond, you know where that is.
Another gloomy Seattleite here.
Yeah.
I left California,
hoping that the weather would be nicer down here.
Yeah, hoping for some sunshine and that it was just like home here.
Yeah. My wife watched a couple of houses washed down the street, and we said, maybe it's time to get out of town.
What I want to know is, when are they going to have VS Live Jamaica?
Well, I don't know. I just did VS Live Australia. That was pretty nice, and it was summertime down there. And
yeah, but
one
it
of the days we were down there, it was, I don't know what it was, and it was Fahrenheit. I was about 100 degrees.
Well, I was there that week, but maybe you were there longer than I was, because the days I was there, it didn't get very warm.
And we went to this party at, whose house was it? Oh, I can't remember now. At the big thunderstorm came in that night.
Yeah,
were you there?
I didn't go to the party, but I got the
big
invite
thunderstorm.
For it,
yeah, and then we were standing on the deck, and the thunderclouds came overhead, and it was like watching some sort of science fiction movie where the aliens invade. And we're like, because it was clear out over the ocean, and then these like blue clouds came over our heads, and then within about 5 minutes, it was pouring and hailing. And
wow!
And then we went up a couple days later. We went up to the Blue Mountains, and that's where it was hot.
Yeah, see, I went to the Blue Mountains, but at the beginning of the trip, I think it was the Sunday before the conference, and it was cold and rainy and miserable. Well, that's what I guess. Right?
Yeah, they didn't say when you do these international conferences, you actually got fun vacations. You just got a trip out of it.
Yeah. See, and people think that, you know, we go
it's
and
so
have
glamorous.
A big party, and all it is, you know, work,
and the hotel rooms are awful, and...
No, actually, that was a very nice hotel.
It was.
Okay, so Walt, here we are at VS Live San Francisco, and you're speaking here at this conference?
I'm doing two talks tomorrow.
And what are they on?
My first topic is data binding and the new data IDE in Visual Studio.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm talking about the new tools, the new data sources window, and how Microsoft's what their new binding story is. And, you know, Microsoft's had how many flavors of data binding and data sources, ADO and RDO and all those. And this one is pretty good. This is a pretty good story.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. So what makes it better or different than a previous story?
Well, it uses object-oriented technology in the background. I mean, there's some glitches here and there. And Rocky's doing a talk on that. And so is Deborah Carrata. She's doing one on a similar topic on object binding. The biggest thing is that, you know, a developer sits down and wants to, if you're going to use data binding, the person that's going to use data binding wants to sit down and do a UI. They want to do a UI, and they want to use a tool to help them get their job done. And in the past, what's happened is when you use data binding, a lot of times it worked really good for demoware, but then when you went back to your corporation where you had, you know, real application and more than 10 users, it didn't scale. There was issues with it. And so you ended up wanting to use it in drag and drop data bind, and it didn't work. It didn't solve your problem. So you ended up having to hand code your stuff anyway. And what the thing that's better in this model is that they're using the patterns and practices that we studied, you were part of the group you were with, you know, learning what the patterns that work best and actually incorporating those in the model.
So you can actually build a real-life production application with this stuff now? Is that what you're saying?
That's what you're saying. Ah. And in a majority of the cases, if you bind to objects as opposed to binding right directly to a database, then you can utilize the binding to you craft your business layer and you create the business logic in there, and it also has some sort of data store, and you can bind directly to the object and call a, you tell it what the select method is, and it'll return an array or a list or a data table, whatever it returns to you, and then you can use that in your grid or your controls. It's really fast. I mean, you can build a nice UI in just a few minutes.
Wow. Well, that, you know, I think a lot of people have, you know, sort of turned a blind eye to that stuff for a lot of years. And
well, I have. I was the same way. Yeah. I've seen a lot of the demos where you go and watch it and go, wow, that's really cool. And then you go back to the office and it doesn't work. And then as a trainer, I do a lot of training. You know, you show up and then you also say, don't do this because these are the five things you don't want to use data binding for. And I mean, they're really close this time around. I think the data binding story is very close to what we want. It's got to be easy. It's got to be fast. It's got to be understandable. It's got to be, it has to scale correctly in the back end. It has to, I mean, one of the things you want with data binding is you want to be able to have the data pushed back into the data source. And a lot of Microsoft's previous stories were really good at getting the data out into the grid. But then when you wanted to put it back in, you had to write calls to stored procedures or write your own insert codes or update codes or delete code for it. And you still do that now, but you put it in your business object. Or you can bind directly to the database. You can bind XML files. You can bind they're using it in ASP.NET to bind the site maps now. When you lay out the menuing system that you want, the way your pages are connected and how they're related, and you put that in an XML file, and then you can bind the tree view control and the menu control and the site, something called the sitemap path, which I would call a breadcrumb control. and those all bind using this new binding source class that Microsoft's created called the site. I forget the name of the class right now, but you bind to it, and then the control fills up with your XML data, and it's no code. There's no code at all in it. You just you have to know what the structure of the XML file for the site.
You know, it's funny that you say that because I keep hearing over and over again people saying, "No code." You know, it's like the amount of code that it takes to do this stuff is going down.
Right. And then the old adage used to be, well, that's going to put us out of work, right? There's no code, so anybody can do it. But what you're paying the developers for is the knowledge of how to piece everything together. Yes, you're a programmer, aren't you?
Ex-programmer.
Ex-programmer.
Well, I know the only code I write nowadays is demos for presentations.
They don't have to have error handling in them. That's the best part about demo code.
Well, you know, but hey, I did my time. Uh-huh. I did my time, yeah.
Right, well, and you also spent a lot of time on the patterns and practices
sure.
group, and that whole group was all about how do you lay out software, correct me if I'm stating this wrongly, but how do you lay out your software so that it interacts correctly with each other?
Well, yeah, basically, I mean, they're about telling people the recommended way to do things,
right.
which actually turned out... before I joined Patterns and Practices, it was one of the things that was attractive to me about that team was that it's actually very hard to figure out what Microsoft recommends about any particular thing. Because, you know, you'll go to a conference and one guy will say one thing, or you'll go here and talk to some other person from a different team and they'll give you a totally different answer. And so it was really hard to figure out if Microsoft has a recommendation and what it is. So the Patterns and Practices team has done a great job about doing that. But you mentioned that data binding was like, to sort of put it in my own words, 99% of what you wanted, or maybe not even that much, but it was like not quite there in some area. What do you think it's missing?
Well, that's a good question, and I think it's answered by some of the talks here, like Rocky. Lotka, he's doing his talk, and that's exactly what he's addressing. And actually, he was going to explain to me some of the things that he found wrong with it, but I haven't had a chance to talk to him at this conference yet.
Oh, okay.
So the basic, right out of the box, it works. And the thing, you come to a lot of these conferences, and there's a wide variety of audience out there, and one of the audiences is the enterprise developer, the ones the patterns are written for. But Microsoft also definitely has a, they're trying to push this out. Remember, they got the Express editions now, and you don't show a brand new web developer doesn't need a lot of the patterns. They just need a simple way to bind. They're trying to build a website for their local car club or their local bridge club. And all they know is they got a little bit, a couple of chunks of data, and they want to put it on a page, whether it's a Windows app or a web app. And the binding story there is really good for them because they can just point it at it. It's not going to scale. You're never going to have more than 30 or 40 people in ever using the application. And I think that's really a good use of the technology. I know there's developers out there that make a living writing small applications for companies. You know, they just pound out site after site after site, you know, the, for these little organizations. I don't know if they make a good living at it or not, but I've taught some of them. They come in and tell me, you know, oh, I'm going to use this to write my, I'm going to start using this.
Well, you know, I mean, if you're writing that kind of app and, you know, you're not expecting to have 10,000 concurrent users, you know, why do you want to knock yourself out crafting the finely tuned code that could scale to thousands of concurrent users when you don't have to?
Right. And the counter argument, of course, is that, well, you should write it correctly the first time so that if you do grow, you can, your application can grow with it. But my argument here is that there's some certain areas of developers who are not going to write those kind of apps ever.
I think you're probably right. Yeah.
And I think, you know, Microsoft is trying to sell this VB Express and C# Express and Web Express. And they're saying, you know, it's free. And the people that are going to come there, it's just like Access was 10, 12 years ago. It's like a lot of people came in and said, ooh, spreadsheets, I can do this. This is kind of cool. And they came in and said, I'm going to do this with Access. I can write a little database for my company. There were some really crappy databases out there. But they solved the problem at the time. Now those databases are still out there.
Yeah,
and the security is a
it's kind of scary when you see
now.
People go, oh yeah, I have my little Access app, and you know we're trying to run it with 50 concurrent users or something.
Yes.
And you go, whoa, it's time to move to SQL, people.
Yeah.
Well, what is the other topic?
My other talk is the one I'm really excited about. That's the Avalon talk. I'm doing Windows Presentation Foundation is the new name for it, but it's the new graphics engine, the UI engine that's going to be part of Vista, Windows Vista. Are you familiar with that?
You know, I've heard about it. Mm-hmm. I've seen some pretty slick demos.
Yeah, you've probably talked to some Indigo folks because they want to talk to you all about the communications framework.
Oh, sure. But you know, the thing that's interesting about Avalon or Windows Presentation Foundation, I like Avalon better.
I do too. I think every developer likes it better.
But I think the thing that's interesting is it's not just going to be a technology that's only on Vista. I mean, it will be out of the box on Vista, but you'll be able to run it on other platforms as well.
It's supposed to be retrofitted to XP.
Yeah.
And then there's a whole new independent... one of the things it is that it coupled the graphics engine from the screen size. So it's going to scale to web pages or to handhelds or cell phones or wherever Microsoft ends up having software run. It scales up from, you know, 96 dots per inch like we currently have up to 150, 200 DPI without changing the size. You know, have you ever worked to change your screen size to 200 DPI? And you know, your fonts end up being like 1 micron
tall.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. And, or, you know, if you start messing around with that stuff, apps look weird.
They look weird because the developer didn't know that you anticipate that you were going to change that. They might have thought, well, they might change the font size, but now you're changing their dots per inch and things don't render correctly. Or they look really tiny and half of your UI's got big fonts and half of your UI's got these little minuscule things and they got scroll bars that show up in odd places because they're scrolling a region because it doesn't fit anymore.
Yeah.
And so the Avalon engine, I mean, it's a total rewrite. They basically take GDI and GDI Plus and throw them out and say, we're going to replace that with a new two-dimensional API for programming. And then they're also adding three-dimensional graphics to it, so you can do animation and 3D. And the thing is, they're all incorporated into the same UI. So you can have the typical examples of spinning cube, right? And then layered over top of that, you can have a standard Windows layer that can detect when you click on the cube. So the developer who's thinking about the UI can just think about it as that cube as a two-dimensional object. But the engine that's drawing it in the background thinks it was a 3D object, so it can do the shading and all the other vector calculations that it needs to do. And, you know, when people talk about Avalon, I've got an hour, and I just blaze through an overview of some of the major areas because I could spend all day talking about it. It's a new fonting technology. It's a new graphics API, as I already mentioned. Did you have a question?
Well, I was just going to say, I'm sure that there's probably a lot of people who think, well, you know, maybe that's fine if you want to be some kind of snazzy graphics designer and, you know, build really goofy looking 3D things or whatever.
Yeah. We're going to see some really ugly applications when Vista comes out because people are going to say, well, I can spin my user interface 360 degrees, so I will. And I've probably heard a dozen people say the same thing. Remember when word processors came out? Remember, you used to get documents with 14 fonts in it, right? And they were all ugly. And then we learned. It's the same thing's going to happen with UIs. You're going to have flashing green buttons, and you're going to have, and like the web, same thing happened when web pages first came out. They had cursive fonts, and they had, you know, magenta-colored backgrounds.
or little sounds on the pages, which I totally hate. That. Yeah,
some really bad MIDI piano playing Star Wars theme or something.
Yeah, so, but I'm sure a lot of people are going to be like, well, I'll just stick with the old WinForms UI, you know, and that'll be fine. But why would I want to move to Avalon?
Well, there's a lot of reasons to move to it. One is that it can be themed. You can create a basic UI and then theme it for different operating systems, different users. The typical thing where you do right now with like Media Player. Has skinning.
Yeah,
that's really easy to do because you basically define a button and say, I've got this area that on the screen that's considered to be a button. And then it's marked in Avalon as a button, so it's clickable. But then Avalon is in charge of what it renders as, right? So you can say, now here's a theme that the typical ones, the glass ones, the transparent buttons, they look like they're made out of glass. So you can theme that very quickly. Another thing is that it's really hard. Right now, you can't combine 2D graphics and 3D graphics in an application without having two separate APIs. You have to use DirectX for your 3D, and you use GDI Plus for the second. So you can have a window on your screen that says, I can have a small window on my application that's where the video is going to play, but that's isolated media. Or I can have a small area on my screen that is where I'm going to put a player there that's going to play my rotating cube. In Avalon, it all becomes one programming model, right? So there's no longer this. The developer doesn't have to learn three different models or six different models.
But is it a steep learning curve though? Is it hard to pick up?
It's going to be brand new. It uses a brand new programming paradigm. Uses a new declarative syntax, which is called XAML, XAML, and it's declarative in the sense that you define in what looks like XML. You define what you want your application to appear like. I want three columns and two rows. And then instead of the way a developer would do it now, you'd write code that says, I'm going to create this object, and I'm going to add three columns, and I'm going to add two rows, and I'm going to make the third row or the second row, you know, 20 pixels tall. In Avalon, you would just do that all declaratively in XML.
But now there will be designers, though. I don't have to just spit out the XML, right?
Right. So there's going to be a new designer. Currently, his code name is called Cider, and that's going to be the new design service for Visual Studio. Mm-hmm. And so a developer who is just a developer who would open up Visual Studio and say, I'm going to do a Avalon form. And behind the scenes, instead of using a regular Windows form designer, it would use the Cider designer.
Yeah.
So when you drag a button on the page, it's going to generate XML. XAML.
Yeah, and like the current one just generates C# or VB code in the code behind file, right?
Right, and it has a partial class.
Yeah,
right. Uh-huh. The new 2005 does a partial class. So in the new one, it's going to generate everything in a XAML file, and that's the declarative piece. So when you move a button to the upper left hand corner, it's going to have a coordinate of 0, 0 in the XAML. If you want to write code, then there's an affiliated VB C# file that goes with it.
And you're just going to react to events the same way, a click event and that sort of thing, right?
Yeah, and there's some new event models. There's these new things called routed events. If you've ever done web development, you can do events where you percolate up a stack. So, like, if you're within a table, it's in a table, which is another table, and you're in the third cell, and something fires in that cell, in web programming, you can percolate that up the call stack so that the event fires at the top, like the top-level table. And you can now do that in Avalon. You can define... The container class is a panel, and you can define that all controls within the panel fire an event. They're percolated up the stack to the top. So the idea is you can write a common event handler for all the buttons within a section of your Avalon app. So there's that. It was one other thing I was going to mention. We were talking about XAML, and the other designers are Microsoft's courting the designer community now. They're going out and saying, well, we're going to build this UI that's going to be much more rich in user interface. You're no longer stuck with little rectangles on the screen. That's the other thing about Avalon is in the current Windows 32, everything's a window. It's typically a rectangle on the screen. And if one rectangle overlaps another rectangle, the rectangle that's highest in the Z order is the only one that reacts to any clicks. With Avalon, you can have layering. And it's the Windows Presentation Foundation that handles the drawing. So if you've got two buttons that overlay each other, they're both considered to be part of the drawing surface. So if one is transparent, you'll be able to see the other one, the other button through it. And that's a bad example because I can't see too many people writing transparent buttons. But the clever people out there and the clever designers are going to come up with good UI paradigms. And so Microsoft's going to say, if we build this thing, like Apple has a new OS, OS 10, it's really pretty. If Avalon is going to be beautiful, and then we need to start talking to the designers and get them involved, right? And so if the design of a form is really in XML, wouldn't it be nice to have a tool that a designer could, who knows something about art and knows how to draw and how to layer and has spent their lifetime doing that, wouldn't it be nice if they could define the look and then just give the developer, here's all the XAML for you, right? And then I can concentrate on writing the code. Right. I can make that pretty button do what it's supposed to do when you click on it. And it's exactly what they're doing. They've created a couple of new tools, the expression set. And one of them is acrylic. And the other one was just released last week. And it's called, do you remember the name of it?
I can't remember.
I should know that. It's in my talk. I just can't think.
I remember the expressions name, but I didn't remember the breakdown.
Yeah, the expressions is like the overview of the four tools.
Yeah.
And then one of them, Sparkle.
Sparkle, that's it. Yeah.
They just released the beta of Sparkle last week. And Sparkle is going to let you do a timeline Flash type UI. So somebody that knows how to use Flash can sit in and say, I want this button to spin. Here we back to the spinning buttons again. This button, let's not spin, let's rotate. So we're going to rotate this button. And I can define a timeline that says this button rotates in 2.5 seconds. Right? And so they'll have a timeline view of that where they can say, well, I want to grow and shrink and change color or whatever they want to do. So the typical Flash type interface. And then they save it out as XAML. Right? I get a button that has that behavior, that animation part. I don't know anything about it. I know I'm supposed to write a click event or a double click event. Now there's another tool called Acrylic that's more like a, having not used it that much, it's more like a drawing tool, and more of an art type tool, not with the timeline affiliated with it. And again, I haven't downloaded my Sparkle beta yet. I will next week.
Okay.
And you'll have an interview with me next year, and I'll tell you all about it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, you know, it seems like they've taken and borrowed some ideas from the web, you know, like the ideas of style sheets and things that web designers have built those and then left the layout to the coders and that sort of thing. I mean, these are great ideas, though.
And same thing with flow. Yeah. If you make your form too narrow on a cell phone, what happens? You can't see anything, right? Mm-hmm. Right? So web has the idea of flowing things down to the page. When you make something too narrow, they all flow down so they're at least you can see them. And some of the new layout tools in Avalon work that way.
I think it's interesting because I never really thought a lot about this until I recently got my tablet PC. And when I turn the screen, you know, and I use it in the tablet mode, the screen like flips around more like a 8.5 by 11
piece of paper.
Piece of paper. And And so you get this interesting look. You know, I'm not used to seeing apps in that long form. And sometimes they look weird or don't make sense, you know, but I'm sure the people who designed them never imagined people running them in a screen resolution like that.
Right.
I think there's only going to be more and more of that kind of stuff happening as design surfaces are not design surfaces, but the UIs that we use, different kinds of devices, will be all over the map.
I agree, because pretty soon you're going to have customers looking at your application on their cell phone. Cell phones just get more and more powerful all the time, and the screen resolutions are bright and the form factor is getting there. It's the same kind of form factor. It's usually long and narrow instead of wide. But so those people are going to start saying, well, why does my application look good? And there's going to be some companies that want to do Windows programming type models, but they don't want to use... I mean, there's still that browser barrier you got to go over when you do web programming. You got to get the compatibility thing. If you're willing to register the Windows platform... Because there's a lot to come. We don't know how many people are going to adopt Vista. How long is it going to take for the platform? But I'm talking about Avalon, and that's only one piece.
Yeah.
And then there's a new security model. I mean, I've just been hearing item after item of what's new in Vista. And
well, you know, I think there's going to be a need for a lot of people to make this kind of move just for the reasons you mentioned with the devices and whatnot. I mean, if you stick around building things on WinForms, you know, it's going to work for a while, but you know, sooner or later you're going to need to make the change. I mean, because, well, for now, I mean, I think browsing the web on my cell phone is like the stupidest thing ever. My cell phone.
Well, that's because you're not under 20 years old.
I guess so. Well, that's like the, you know, SMS messages. I never do those either, but my kids do.
Right, exactly. Well, I saw Robert Scoble was talking about that earlier this week, and he said, look around the kids, none of them have laptops. First of all, who can spend $1,000 or $2,000 for a laptop when you're a kid? But you can go buy a phone for $99.
Yeah.
And those phones are every new generation that comes out, which a generation cell phone technology is, what, about 6 months?
I know. I'm about ready to pitch mine, and it's not even a year old yet.
That's sad. I've got a year and a half on mine, and it's starting to look a little weary.
Well, you know, it's not that there's anything wrong with mine. It's just that there's a better one now that I want, you know, and I saw that one, and I went, oh, I really want to get that. So
that's your iPod envy then, right? It's like... Because you're a Microsoft employee, you obviously can't buy an iPod. Isn't that the old
rumor?
No,
they have a rule around that, yeah. Well, are you going to write a book about Avalon?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what I'm going to do yet. I'm actually here at the conference. I'm going to propose some Avalon pre-training for one of the companies I do some training with, like a one-day Avalon overview type thing. Mm. I just thought of that on the plane flight down. I thought that might be a good thing to start offering now. Kind of like a what's... I'm doing some ASP.NET, what's new, and I do it all. I do Windows development and web development. Avalon just is so interesting to me. Partly because when I was a young programmer, I just, like most of us, I wanted to write games and I wanted to manipulate pictures on the screen. And I remember writing an algorithm on an Apple II. I don't remember how many years ago, but a long time ago.
Yeah, that's way back.
And I remember spending days trying to get a little red dot to move around in an orbit. And I was so proud of myself. And it's like, and I showed it to my family and they're like, yeah, it took you 2 days to do that? It's like, no, but you don't understand. It's moving. It moves in a circle and it's an actual orbit. I'm like, so I still have that yearning.
There you go.
For graphics. And it's just this engine. I mean, I've used DirectX, and I spent a bunch of time with GDI Plus, and it's really nice, but it's nothing compared to what you can do in Avalon.
Oh, that's great. Well, you know, I'm starting, you know, Oprah has a book club. You know,
you're going to get on it?
No. I'm starting Ron's ArtCast book club. Because, see, she has, like, you know, non-techie books, but...
Is that what you call this program, ArtCast?
ArtCast. Yes, this is ArtCast.
R-A-R-Cast?
A-R-C-A-S-T, yes. Okay. ArtCast. And so I'm going to start the ArtCast book club, because people are always asking me, you know, what's a good book that I should read? I don't know. So do you have any
good book recommendations? If you want me to write an Avalon book and you'll give me an advance, I'm sure I can come up with something.
I can give you, I don't know, I got 50 cents here or something.
Yeah. Give me MS Press phone number.
Well, you know, anyway, so if you run across a good book for my book club, make sure you let me know.
Okay.
And we'll get that word out. But thanks so much for stopping by today.
Oh, that's been great. Thanks for having me.
Walt Richer, ladies and gentlemen. Data Binding and Windows Presentation Foundation guy. You know, Walt's got a lot of stuff on his plate, huh? What'd you think? Did you like that? Hopefully you did. You know, I really enjoy getting mail from you, my listeners. In fact, I got a nice note from Ben. And Ben says, hey, he was listening to Rick Merrifield speak about the Business in Motion, our casts. And he said, great segment. I heard Rick speak before, but I got so much more out of listening to your ArtCast in the car this week. Seems like your topics, or the order I'm listening to them, are closely following the project I'm on. Keep up the great work. Hey, Ben, we will keep it up. What do you think? Send me a note to ron.jacobs@microsoft.com, and we'll see you next time here on ArtCast.